name of our show is opening soon at a theater near you. Two film critics talking about the movies, and this is Roger Ebert, the film critic from the Chicago Sun-Times.
And right over here is Gene Siskel, the film critic from the Chicago Tribune and Channel 2 News.
The point of our show is to sort of be a news magazine about movies, and we want to show you what's playing in town, what's coming to town, and also maybe take you behind the scenes and show you a little bit about the movie business.
Right. Tonight we're going to do a little wrap-up on the Chicago Film Festival, which ended last week in Chicago, setting new records for attendance. We're going to look at a family film, Mr. Quilp. We're going to look at an MGM retrospective. We're going to look at Conduct Unbecoming, which is a rather unbecoming film. And Gene, the festival had the world premiere last week of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which just had the audience tearing up the seats with joy.
Yeah, and also, I think tearing up a little my enjoyment of the film. They were applauding even during the credits as Jack Nicholson's name came on the screen for the credits. The place went wild. Same thing for the director, Milos Forman.
They even applauded the cinematographer.
There's some Chicago history. This Week in Chicago History, sponsored by UChicagoMedicine.org, Anna DeVlantis joins us. Was that their first show?
Very first episode. Bob, that's Siskel and Ebert debuting on Chicago airwaves on WTTW at first, before they were syndicated. That was what they did. They just started out here locally, and audiences gave it two thumbs up from the start. It was such a hit, so well received, and maybe not what you'd expect too, because you know it's like two non-flashy, down-to-earth guys. You got Gene Siskel, the film critic of the Tribune, and Roger Ebert at the Sun Times, and they just sat down and reviewed movies, and people loved it. You have to remember, though, this is before Fandango, before Rotten Tomatoes, where before you decided if you're going to spend your hard-earned money on a movie, you kind of wanted to listen to what Gene and Roger had to say. And so there you go. It's just it's fascinating to think about it.
1975.
You know?
Two thumbs up for those boys.
Absolutely.
Let's go to something that is quite infamous. The 1920, well, they were called the Chicago Black Sox, weren't they?
Yeah, this was a dark week for the Chicago White Sox, or the Black Sox, as you suggest there, Bob. This was the week when a grand jury was convened. So much talk about what had been done in that 1919 World Series. They got a grand jury together to consider the evidence, to hear testimony against the eight White Sox players suspected of taking bribes to throw those games. People forget all eight were acquitted in Cook County courts, even though the grand jury indicted them and said that there were enough to pursue charges. They were acquitted, but nonetheless, they were thrown out of baseball, their reputations forever tarnished. Dave, you may be able to jump in on this, too. The whole scrutiny of Charles Comiskey, former player himself, about was he underplaying the team members? And was that part of this
everybody,
whole thing?
Everybody hated him.
Yeah. There was some thought that the term Black Sox referred to him refusing to pay to have the players' uniforms cleaned.
Right. Yeah.
And he was a former player who had stood up for this kind of thing. But I don't know. That played its role in the whole thing. We pulled a clip here. There's books written about this, as you guys know. There's movies made. We just pulled a clip from Eight Men Out. And the one controversy that remains after the scandal to this day.
Baseball, 1919. There were no free agents, no million-dollar salaries, but there was a team no one could beat. The true story of the team they called the Black Sox, and the scandal that broke the heart of a nation.
Any bet against my Sox this series is a sucker bet.
You can find seven men on the best club willing to throw the World Series.
You sure there's Joe in there?
You want me?
You don't want to be stupid, do you, Joe?
Now, you just sign your name right there, Joe.
Shoeless Joe Jackson. Say it ain't so, Joe. It seems like every week or two there's another story about what really happened.
Right. And I don't know, that movie focuses on the whole controversy. Was Shoeless Joe really as culpable as the others? And, you know, should he be considered for the Hall of Fame? A lot of people think he should.
We're recording right now, aren't we? Everybody's going to get in the act. All right, coming up. My whole Bohemia is the place to be.
Ella Fitzgerald recording at Mr. Kelly's in Chicago.
You remember Mr. Kelly's, don't you, Bob?
You know, I got in just at the end of that era. They closed in 75, right?
75, legendary Rush Street nightclub, Mr. Kelly's. Ella Fitzgerald was one of the many major artists who not only performed there, she recorded an album there. You go through the list, it's just incredible. Aretha Franklin, Liza Minnelli, Billie Holiday, Barry Manilow, and then they had the top comedians, all also were featured there at the time. Richard Pryor, Joan Rivers, Bob Newhart, George Carlin, Bill Cosby, and Bette Midler came back a few times to perform at Mr. Kelly's. So the brothers, just the Marienthal brothers who started it, they just featured a musical act and a comedy act, and they were really good. They had this eye for talent at finding the rising stars, including a very young Barbara Streisand. Here she is recalling her time performing in Chicago at Mr. Kelly's way back when.
I first came to Chicago when I was 21 years old to sing at Mr. Kelly's, a little nightclub on Rush Street. And one night after the show, I went with a photographer who had been hired to shoot a magazine article about me. He took me down to the Oak Street beach and we took a bunch of shots there. I love the mood and memory of that early morning shoot so much that about a year later, when I was looking for a photo for the cover of my People album, I chose one of the pictures from that beach shoot. The funny thing is, though, I picked one with my back to the camera. I gave it to Columbia Records at the time and said, let's use this as the cover. And some people at the label thought that was a terrible idea. You know, they kept saying, we want to see your face. Anyway, it was a sweet little victory when the People cover won the Grammy Award for Best Album Cover. I like to think that Chicago has always brought me good luck.
And now Gibson is there.
Yeah, same spot.
Exactly. Yeah. This club that closed this week in 1992, I don't remember
don't
this. Tell
it.
Us about it.
Lesser known to probably some of our listeners, but if you grew up at a certain time, this was Medusa's. I know there's a big feature in one of the local papers about this. Closed 30 years ago, big with the young crowd there in the 80s and early 90s. It was kind of celebrated the fringes of music and culture, but anyone was welcome. That was the thing. It was rock. It was punk, goth. It was preppy. It was one of the few places, Bob, where if you were standing in line to get in, you could see a guy with a mohawk and nose chains right in front of a guy with an Isaac LaCrosse t-shirt or something, like one of those, you know, collared shirts, the preppy things. That's the way it was, and it just kind of celebrated that. It was on Sheffield, 3000 North, right in a residential neighborhood, which proved to be the problem. Bernie Hansen was getting a lot of complaints from neighbors there that it was a drug culture place, that it was too loud, and eventually they got their wish and it shut down. They didn't renew its lease, so Medusa's was done after about 10 years.
Yeah, closed this week in 1992. This is the week that a great restaurant that's still going strong, thank goodness, opened its doors.
Love this place. Gene and Giorgetti's opened its doors 1941, Bob. Still going strong, as you say, right there under the L tracks in River North, started by Gene Michelotti and Alfredo Frederici, whose nickname was Giorgetti, and that's about 80 years ago. So old school, you know, the bartenders that will pour the stiff drinks, and a lot of people just love that old school feel there. A favorite with celebrities, too. They even feature on their website all the people there who have come, you know, over the years. Bob Hope, Frank Sinatra, more recently Vince Vaughn and Will Ferrell like to go there when they're in town. It's just such a great place. And it's one of those places, Bob, that you're like, get the sense if you ask what's happening in there, they'll be like, who's asking?
Yeah.
We're not telling nobody nothing about what happens here. You know, it's one of those places.
And pictures on the walls, like a museum in
totally.
There.
Totally.
500 North Franklin, and food is still fantastic.
Yeah.
And I was there recently on a weekday, mm-hmm. and it was nice to see it jammed.
Oh, I love that, because I know they were one of those that kind of didn't do as well during the pandemic.
Right. And also we should mention something about the famous Cindy Crawford here, shouldn't we?
Cindy Crawford, 1984, discovered by a famous fashion photographer who also called Chicago home, Victor Skribneski. He asked her to sit for a shoot this week with him after being featured in a modeling contest. She didn't win it. She was just one of them. And she was in Chicago. He was in Chicago. And he asked her to sit for that shoot. And after that, she was whisked off to New York and a big agency. And the rest is history. Supermodel stardom. But, you know, interesting about Cindy, people may not remember, she was a class valedictorian, excuse me, mm-hmm. at DeKalb High School, where she went, the DeKalb High School. And she was accepted to Northwestern to study chemical engineering and had already started that semester when she said, you know what, this modeling thing is going pretty well. I got this opportunity and I'm going to take it. So good for her.
Yeah. I mean, they would get big money, wouldn't they?
Well, yes, but she was part of that supermodel class, Bob, that would joke that we don't get up, we don't get out of bed for less than $10,000.
Yeah, good for her. And she still looks great today.
Still does. It's still going strong. So.
This Week in Chicago History, 1984. Anna DeVlantis, thank you. We'll
Thanks,
talk
Bob.
To you here next Wednesday.